Our next case is Harper against the Madison Metropolitan School District. Mr. Olson.
May it please the court, Marilyn Harper was the only African-American parent at Crestwood Elementary School who tried to stay on top of her daughter's progress in exactly the same way many white parents did. She was, in her interactions with school personnel, at least at summary judgment stage, always courteous, civil, and even-tempered. White teachers complained to their bosses, principals Manthe Roberts and later Fritz, that Ms. Harper was intimidating when she visited their classrooms and when she interacted with them. But the only specific complaint about Ms. Harper's behavior in the classroom were that she took notes, she didn't smile, and that she crossed her arms. Both Manthe Roberts and Fritz knew Ms. Harper from personal meetings, from telephone conferences, and from correspondence with her. And they both knew that she was not given to discourtesy. They both knew that she was never less than professional. Now, a reasonable jury could find on these facts that had Ms. Harper been white, neither Ms. Manthe Roberts nor Ms. Fritz would have imposed the restrictions they did on Ms. Harper's access to her children's class.
And what is the basis for going from the facts we know to the conclusion that race is the reason?
First, both Manthe Roberts and Fritz had reason, based on their own personal experience, to doubt any reports that Ms. Harper had been misbehaving in her interactions with the teachers. Second,
well, wait a minute. I think it's maybe the wrong way to go to think about misbehaving so much. This record, you know, which we wouldn't second guess, shows that she's courteous, right? But she's doing a lot of things that no other parent at this school is doing. She's talking about, you know, asking for much more time, making lots of demands, criticizing the teachers much more vigorously than the criticisms of the other teacher, Mr. Strother, I think was his name. She's bringing wishes to bring separate experts into the classroom. She's her actions are generating far more in the way of letters and staff complaints than any other parent. There are differences. I mean, the question is, are those the kinds of differences that have legal significance to make her not similarly situated to the other parents, or are those the kinds of differences that do not have that legal significance?
I think reading the record in the light most favorable to Ms. Harper, she was not more of a complainer and more of an activist than Deb Rice or Elizabeth Cross or Mr. Frankowski.
But I've looked at those people's actions, and actually she does many more things. Her interventions certainly do yield much more in the way of teacher complaints and principal action than do the interactions of the three parents that you mentioned. So there's a difference. Is it a legally significant difference at the summary judgment stage?
Given that she wasn't... Oh, go ahead.
I'm not comfortable with you making your argument on the grounds that this is all the same, because it really isn't. They aren't talking about bringing the math expert into the classroom, and they're not visiting to nearly the same extent. The letter from Diane Johnson is in the record. And the principal was acting on the basis of Ms. Johnson's perceptions, among others. So there are differences.
To the extent that these differences are that teachers are saying Ms. Harper is scaring us, intimidating and frightening us, I think there's enough evidence in the record to suggest that the principals knew or should have at least entertain the possibility that these teacher perceptions are based on the teacher's racial prejudices. Deb Rice told Principal Fritz that these teachers are prejudiced. I see it on field trips where they yell at Mr. Strother's minority kids for things that they let their own white kids get away with. And also told Principal Fritz that there's segregation in the class assignments and all the minority kids are grouped together with the minority teacher. So
why does that lead to an inference that Ms. Johnson or the particular teachers at issue here are complaining that really everything they're saying is, or the full staff meeting is really an elaborate smokescreen for racial prejudice? Don't we need to deal with the specifics?
Well, that's what I would say that the principals should have done at the point that they've got these vague and general complaints about Ms. Harper being intimidating by crossing her arms or not smiling or taking notes.
Well, why wasn't Ms. Fritz's decision simply to attend the class with Ms. Harper exactly the kind of response that you're talking about?
Because it was not...
What's wrong with the principal? Principal can go into any classroom at any time in a school.
This wasn't done by way of checking out the validity of the complaints about Ms. Harper. It was done by way of interposing a buffer between Ms. Harper and the teachers.
Why do you know that? Why not?
Because
why not
that's what
just
she
an
said.
Objective observer in the room to see if there was anything inappropriate going on either side?
Ms. Fritz never said that she was doing this to check out the legitimacy of the teacher complaints. She said she was doing it to protect her teachers from Ms. Harper. Matthew Roberts also had reason to know that the teachers were possibly biased against Ms. Harper because she admitted that she was concerned about the reactions of her staff to the influx of minority students from the Allied Drive area.
But what about, that's not these classes either, what about Ms. Harper's letters, which are in the record?
They're...
With all capital letters?
Well, there's some all caps words in those letters that she wouldn't have put in there if she would have read this court style manual. But I don't think they're all that unprofessional, and they're no stronger than the reports that Deb Wright says she made about Mr. Strother, where she went so far as to get personal and say Mr. Strother is a poor teacher.
Is that impossible?
Is it impossible that
Mr. Strother is a poor teacher, or that somebody might have thought that?
Oh, not impossible at all.
Not at all.
But the point is not whether he's a poor teacher. The point is whether the principal is going to then step in and protect him from this complaining parent. And when the complaining parent is white, the answer is no. I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, counsel. Mr. Rohrer.
May it please the court, my name is David Rohrer, and I'm here on behalf of the defendants, appellees. The key fact here that I believe plaintiff has not addressed is that the principals were acting in response to teacher complaints about Ms. Harper's behavior.
But what if the teachers only complained when it's an African-American parent, and isn't that something like a heckler's veto?
Well, the fact is that these teachers, as their affidavits show, had a great deal of experience working with other African-American parents. In one case, I believe it was Diane Johnson, indicated she'd worked with at least 100 other African-American families and had encountered none of these kinds of difficulties. So I don't believe that's the case at all, that it was just her being African-American that caused these teachers to complain. As a matter of fact, I don't believe that plaintiff seriously believes that, because she herself conceded certain facts in the court below. She admitted that she was aware that teachers at Crestwood considered her a difficult parent to work with and considered her disrespectful. She was aware of that. She had heard that teachers at Crestwood have talked about her, but never once was there any mention of her race being a factor in the way the teachers regarded her. also, I would
so
like...
So on summary judgment, though, can we take into account the fact that somebody like Diane Johnson had these other 100 African-American families that she had dealt with without prompting any need for letters to the principal? If there's a discriminatory attitude about one parent?
Well, I think the plaintiff has to show that she was similarly situated to other non-African American parents. And that simply is not the case, because these other white parents that plaintiff is pointing to, Rice, Cross, and Frankowski, did not generate teacher complaints. And you know, in the absence of that kind of comparison evidence, and this court has required that the comparison group be rather closely matched, that there be a pretty close match before any inference of race discrimination can be raised. I mean, we're talking here about a need to show intentional race discrimination. I mean, if in fact plaintiff truly believed that these teachers were racially motivated, why aren't these teachers defendants? Peter Plain was originally a defendant in this case, and the charge was that Peter Plain was racially motivated in the way he treated the plaintiff. He was dismissed voluntarily. So, I mean, even the plaintiff here, in her deposition, she states that she did not think the difficulties she had with Ms. Ackley, for instance, were because of plaintiff's race. That was an admission in her deposition. She also admitted in her deposition that the problems that she had with Diane Johnson was just a breakdown of communication. So, you know, I think you need something more than that to show an equal protection violation, even at the summary judgment stage. Plaintiff herself has to be convinced of the legitimacy of her allegations, I think, before the court's required to make that inference. At one point, plaintiff in the court below, actually in the court below, the plaintiff took the approach that these teachers were simply overly sensitive to Ms. Harper's criticisms. It didn't seriously argue that the teachers were racially motivated.
But she seems to make it pretty clear that she thinks the reason underneath it all is that she is an African-American parent, and the other parents, presumably the other complainers, aren't. I don't think that part of the record is unclear. Whether, again, you know, whether she's similarly situated or not is an issue, but it seems to me she's been crystal clear about her complaint here.
Well, that may be her perception. But,
well, and that's why she brought the lawsuit.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
It seems to me that's not a useful ground to go off on, whether she's similarly situated or not with the number of the complaints or the nature of her interactions as compared to these others is, I think, where we need to focus.
Right, but I guess my point is that she is not willing to attribute to the teachers any racial motivation, and she conceded that in her deposition, that it was something other than that, then how can she expect the principals to have reasonably suspected that the teachers were racially motivated? I mean, that's the point. There's nothing here, and we're talking about the principals who are the defendants, not the teachers, as the court well knows.
Ms. Baum is still a defendant. Isn't she administration?
Yes. Well, she is still a defendant, although she ceased to become involved in the case after February of 1999. So she's only a player with respect to the 1998-99 school year with Mary Manthe Roberts. She's not a player with respect to what Principal Fritz was involved in. I would point out to the court, too, that there were two intervening years here, the 1999-2000 school year, as well as the 2000-2001 school year, where there were no restrictions placed on the plaintiff. Even though in the 1999-2000 school year, we had Manthe Roberts also the principal, and in the 2000-2001 school year, Ms. Fritz was the principal. And the reason why there were no restrictions, I think the court has to assume, is that there were no teacher complaints or requests from the teachers for help from the principal in dealing with the plaintiff. In any event, plaintiff does dispute the motivation for the principals, but there's nothing in the record to suggest that anything other than these teacher requests for help motivated the principal. I would point out to the court, too, that there was a meeting with 15 teachers at Crestwell Elementary School that was convened to talk about Ms. Harper. So we're not talking about just a couple of teachers that plaintiff suggests harbored some racial bias. This was quite a group. Even the teachers that Ms. Harper seemed to like did not take kindly to the manner in which she approached them. Now, Assistant Superintendent Baum thought that perhaps the fact that Ms. Harper was a fellow teacher made these other teachers overly sensitive to the way she interacted with them, and that may well be the case, that the fact that Ms. Harper was a colleague of theirs and was offering these criticisms about their teaching methods heightened their sensitivity. But that says nothing about any racial motivation. So when you put it all together here, there's just nothing. The method that the district court looked at, whether there was any evidence that these other parents were similarly situated, there's an absence of evidence there, and there's just nothing else to suggest racial motivation in this case, other than the plaintiff's perceptions and her self-serving declarations that she was always polite and so on and so forth. Even though plaintiff Mr. Olson in his opening argument did not discuss the Desert Palace case, I should at least refer to that briefly. I don't believe that Desert Palace changes the landscape here at all in terms of equal protection jurisprudence. Based on an intervening act of Congress, the Civil Rights Act of 1991, that we don't have in operation here. Also, I would like to point out that I think plaintiff has waived this argument in the court below by not raising it. In the court below, the plaintiff argued that she was indeed similarly situated, not that that test didn't apply in this circumstance. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Olson?
First of all, this 15-teacher meeting doesn't mean that there were 15 teachers complaining. It was clearly a meeting called by the local union, Madison Teachers Incorporated, and it appears that most of these teachers are probably there just as union members to support each other, as they would often do. Second, I'm glad we don't hear the argument that it's our burden to identify some identically situated white parent. I don't think the court has to go all the way to Desert Palace to resolve the question of whether that's an evidentiary rule that ought to be applied. The court doesn't really have to go any farther than its old decision in the fountain of class of one jurisprudence here, Esmail versus McCrane, where the court recognized that plaintiff's burden is to show people who are comparably situated or even less deserving of favor than the plaintiff to demonstrate unequal treatment. I think the plaintiff has done that with the parents, the white parents that are identified in this case. Mr. Rohrer disparages Ms. Harper's use of her self-serving affidavit to establish her even temperedness and courteous demeanor, but she's clearly entitled to do that. We disparaged their use of self-serving affidavits and deposition testimony in our brief, and we were wrong about that. They're entitled to do that, and that puts the burden back on us to come up with circumstantial evidence. That that question was answered, I think, finally by this court in Payne versus Pauley last summer in July, decided just about early July last summer. Finally, we're not saying that the principals had a duty to perceive these complaining teachers as members of the Ku Klux Klan who were consciously motivated by race, but we think the principals clearly had enough information to perceive that the teachers may well have been given their history in an all-white school district to which black students had only recently been brought, may well have perceived the same gesture or the same facial expression from Ms. Harper's black face differently than the same gesture or expression from the white parents' white faces and acted differently and complained against Ms. Harper. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. Our fifth case for argument.